Job chapter 19. Yep, it's going to be Job. All right, so let me just kind of set the stage for you here just for a second. For Job, I think it'll kind of help us to understand. And I'm going to do the whole chapter of chapter 19. Don't worry, though, it's not going to be, I think we're going to get through it pretty quickly. But just remember about Job in the first couple of chapters, set the stage for this message of Job. He basically lost everything. There was a raid from some neighboring people. They came in and they stole all his oxen, killed the servants that were watching them. There was a fire that fell down from heaven, killed all his sheep and killed the shepherds, the people that were watching them. There was a great wind. It doesn't say tornado, but it was this massive wind that came in and tore up the building where all his children and were having a dinner together, and it killed all of them. And then there was, you know, another, he lost everything. He lost everything he owned. He lost his family. And then finally, he gets these sores over his entire body. It says from the top of his head to the soles of his feet. And then there's these three guys, we'll call them friends because that's generally how we refer to them. These three friends that come to comfort Job. Well, that's actually not fair to say. What they say to Job is, you must have been really bad. You must have really made God mad. There ain't no way that God would treat you like this unless you had done something really, really bad. And so here we find Job. So this is the situation that he finds himself. He's lost everything. He's lost all his kids. He's lost everything he owned. Everything's been destroyed. People who he thought might kind of give him a little encouragement are actually telling him that he's obviously some kind of terrible person. And so here's Job, chapter 19. Now look, I want you to see, Job draws a lot of pictures. He uses a lot of pictures to describe and explain how he's feeling leading up to where I want to be. So I'm going to read through this verse by verse, and I want to point out and sort of help you to see what Job is feeling. And obviously the first thing he feels is he feels unsupported by anyone around him. Job answered and he said, "How long will you torment my soul and break me in pieces with words? 10 times you have reproached me. You are not ashamed that you have wronged me." So he says, listen, you guys are killing me. You're tearing me up. You're not picking me up. You're ripping me apart. In verse 4, he says, "If indeed I've erred, my error remains within me." He says, look, if I've sinned, I don't need you to tell me that because I know that I've sinned. I know that I've sinned, and my sin is within me. And I don't need you telling me how bad I've been. And then he says in verse 6, "Know that God has wronged me and has surrounded me with his net." Look, he feels like God is against him. And he's going to use this image in a minute to say another image to say sort of the same thing. But he says, look, God has wronged me. He says, God has not treated me fairly. God has not treated me right. And he says, he surrounded me with a net. He says, I'm like an animal that's been trapped. I am trapped. I've been captured in a net, and there is no way for me to get out. He says, I cry out concerning wrong, and I am not heard. If I cry aloud, there is no justice. And he's using this idea that I am a person, but it's kind of a courtroom scene, really. He's saying, I am crying out for justice. I am crying out for what I know is right. And no one hears me. No one will listen to me. I can get no justice. I don't have anyone that will allow my voice to be heard. Verse 8, he's fenced up my way so that I cannot pass. He says, I'm like a guy journeying through this life, and I can't find the way to go. Every time I think I can go this way, there's a fence, there's a gate, I can't get through. And he's saying, I'm just sort of wandering around like I'm lost, and I don't know, I don't even know which way to go. In fact, he says, after that, he says, he set darkness in my paths. Not only do I not know which way to go, not only when I start going a certain way, do I find these roadblocks that won't let me go that way? He says, but at some points, I can't even see where to go. I can't even see the path. I can't even see the road. It's dark. He's put darkness in my life. He's put darkness all around me. He said, I'm just lost. Not just spiritually, but emotionally. He's just lost. He's just lost in life. And he just doesn't know where to go and what to do. Verse 9, he stripped me of my glory and taken the crown from my head. And this is sort of like a dethroned king. And he's basically saying, I've lost any honor I've ever had. Anything that gave me any kind of self-esteem, it has been stripped away from me. It is gone. I am nothing now, and I am nobody. I have no honor. There is nothing for me. Verse 10, he breaks me down on every side. I'm gone. My hope, he has uprooted like a tree. He said he breaks me down. This is, many of you passed by this week, and you notice that the old little house over there, old Minister Alliance building, is just gone, just torn down, boom, just like that. That's what he's saying. You've broken me down. I'm like a building that you've just demolished. You brought in a bulldozer, and you've just demolished me and knocked me down. I'm like a tree that you've uprooted, a tree, and you remember a lot of the hurricanes that we had and how those big trees would just fall over and the big root ball would be sticking up in the air. He's saying, I'm like a tree that's been uprooted. I'm like a building that's been destroyed. Does any of this ring a bell with any of you? Have any of you in your life ever felt trapped, didn't know where to go, didn't know how to get there, a darkness and you couldn't even see the way, like you have nothing, no self-esteem, that you've been stripped of all of your glory, that you're like a building that's been destroyed, you're like a tree that's been uprooted? And he even goes farther in verse 11. He says, he has kindled his wrath against me. He counts me as one of his enemies. He says, I actually feel like I'm an enemy of God. That's how I'm feeling right now. I actually feel like God is against me. Not only that God is not for me, but God is actually against me. He's saying, that's how I feel in my heart. The troops come together, verse 12. His troops come together and they build up their road against me and they encamp all around me. And he's drawing this picture of an army coming and surrounding a city before it's about to conquer it and before it's about to take control of it. He said, that's how I feel right now. I feel completely and totally surrounded by the enemy, and I am helpless and hopeless to be able to accomplish anything and to be able to overcome this. Verses 13 through about 16, he talks about all of the relationships that he has, relationships that you would think would be supportive, and he says, they are gone. God has removed those. Listen, he's removed my brothers far from me. My acquaintances are completely estranged from me. My relatives have failed. My close friends have forgotten me. Those who dwell in my house and my maidservants, they count me as a stranger. I'm an alien in their sight. And he's talking about the people that live in his own home. I call my servant, but he gives no answer. I beg him with my mouth. My breath is offensive to my wife. I am repulsive to the children of my own body. Even young children despise me. I arise and they speak against me. All my close friends abhor me, and those whom I love have turned against me. He says, everybody that I could possibly look to and look for some strength and look for some uplifting, they are gone. They hate me. They can't stand me. They ignore me. They are gone away from me. Job is desperate, and he has found himself in a place of life where he feels abandoned by God. He feels all alone, like an animal trapped in a net that can't get away. He can't find his way. He doesn't know where to go, and he doesn't know what to do. Now, he's not going to give us the answer. Well, just stay with me. Look in verse 23. He's about to say something. In spite of all of this, he says, oh, that my words were written and that they were inscribed in a book. Who knew, right, that they would be? He says that they were engraved on a rock with an iron pen and lead forever. Here's what Job's saying right here. He's saying, look, I don't know what's going to happen to me. If you look at my life right now, it doesn't look good. But he says, I want you to remember what I'm about to say. I want you to remember. I want what I'm about to say to be written down. Not only do I want it to be written down, I want it to be engraved in a stone with an engraving tool, because I want it to last forever. Because in spite of what you see when you look at me, in spite of what you see when you look at my life, there is something that I need you to know about how I am really feeling deep, deep down in my heart. He says, I know that my Redeemer lives. He says, I know. There is a certainty to Christian faith. There is a certain assurance to the life of a Christian. Some people call it arrogant. How do you know you were saved? Well, because I was there. I'll get to that in a minute. In 1 John chapter 5, verse 13, John writes these words. He says, these things I have written to you who believe in the name of the Son of God, so that you may know that you have eternal life, and that you may continue to believe in the name of the Son of God. There is an assurance to the Christian faith and to the Christian walk. Listen, hope, when we use the word hope, biblical hope is different than the way we use the word hope. I hope there's football come fall. I really do. But that means, because I hope there's a little bit of uncertainty. That's not biblical hope. That's not the hope that's produced by biblical faith. Faith is the substance of things that are hoped for. It's the evidence of things that are not seen. There is a confident, assured expectation in biblical hope. There is, I know. And that's what Job is saying right here. You look at my life, I know what it looks like. He says, but I want to tell you something. There is something that I know. I know as deep and as real as I could ever know. And I want you to hear what I'm saying, and I want you to remember it, not by looking at what's going on in my life, but I want you to know something. I know that my Redeemer lives. Job says, I know that I have a Redeemer. I know that there is someone who can rescue me. I know that there is someone who can take those shackles off, who can release me from this net that I'm trapped in. I know that there is one who can show me the way and open the gates and shine light into the darkness that is shining in my way. He's saying, I know that there is one who can crown me with his glory. I know that there is one who can build me back up from this destruction. He says, I know that I have a Redeemer. I know, he says, that my Redeemer lives. I know there is a builder. There is one who's greater. There is one who can set us free. There is a forgiver of our sins. And he says, I know that I have a Redeemer. And I am assured of it. Listen, Job is the first written book that we have of the entire Bible. It predates the books of Moses. He's not referring to, as some of you Bible teachers, this kinsman redeemer. He's not thinking of an actual person, a nephew or a brother-in-law. Or he's not thinking of a cousin, of someone who could come in and pay his debts. He is thinking of someone who can come in and fix his life. He says, I know that my Redeemer lives. Not only do I know that I have a Redeemer, he says, but I want to tell you what, he lives. He says, I know that my Redeemer lives. He is alive. And the fact that he is alive means that he is able to actually come in and do a work. He is actually able to come in and make something happen. God, Jesus didn't just die and leave us some words, and we're supposed to, through the implementation of the principles of his words, we're going to find this nirvana. No, that's not what he came to do. He came to give us life. He came to be our rescuer. He came to set us free. He came to show us the way. He came to lead us and guide us and open up the way for us. I know, he says, I know that my Redeemer lives. Listen, I know that my Redeemer lives. I know. My life had no peace whatsoever. In fact, life seemed completely meaningless. You wake up every day. You did what you had to do. You went out, you worked, you scratched, whatever. You enjoyed what you had, if you had it. You went to bed, you woke up, and you did it all over again. It was meaningless. It was aimless. There was no purpose. There was no direction. I didn't know where I was going. Quite frankly, I didn't even care where I was going. I was just being blown around by the wind or like the waves of the sea. If the waves went that way, that's the way I went. It was meaningless. It was joyless. There was no happiness. There was no peace. Quite frankly, it was dark. Not only if I started to go away, I found myself fenced in. I couldn't even see the way. It was just a darkness all around me until one day, I opened up my heart and I said yes to the salvation that God offers in his son, Jesus Christ. And it all changed. It all changed. Suddenly there was a light inside of my life. Suddenly there was a way for me to find peace. Suddenly there was a way for me to find some joy and happiness. Suddenly my life had purpose. Suddenly it didn't seem meaningless. Suddenly I could see a pathway for my life to walk down as I followed Christ. Listen, y'all, I know that my Redeemer lives. And Job said he knew that his Redeemer lives. We have a Redeemer that's able to act. He didn't just give us some words and leave them to us to uplift our lives so that we can find some sort of nirvana. He came to walk with us. He came to deliver us. He came to set us free. He came to be the light in our darkness. He came to glorify us. He came to build us up and not tear us down. He came to be our rescuer. He came to be our deliverer. And just like Job, I know that my Redeemer lives. He lives. We just got through celebrating that at Easter. I can't get off of it. If you've noticed since Easter, every sermon has been like an Easter sermon. And you're getting another one next week. I'm just going to go ahead and warn you. I can't get away from Easter this year. For some reason, God won't let me get it out of my heart that Christ has been raised from the dead. And look, I know that my Redeemer lives. And look, listen, it just blows my mind what Job understands being the earliest book written. And he says, I know that my Redeemer lives, and he shall stand at last on this earth. Job says, not only do I know that he's alive, but I know that he is coming to this earth. And I know that Christ is coming again. I know that of all the prophecies that have been fulfilled through scriptures, that I know that this scripture of him returning, he is going to do it. He will fulfill his word, and he is coming again. I know that at last he will stand on this earth. When he said, I'm going to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, then I'm going to come again, and I'm going to receive you to myself so that where I am, there you may be also. I just believe he's telling the truth. And it's by faith I have this confidence. There's actually no doubt in my mind that Christ will come again, and at last he will stand on this earth. And Job even takes it further. He says, and after my skin is destroyed, this I know, that in my flesh I will see God. Job says, I know that my Redeemer lives. I know that I have a rescuer. I know that he is alive. I know that he can rescue me. I know that he's coming to this world again. I know that he will stand on it. He says, and I know that I will see him. He says, after my skin is destroyed, that in my flesh I will see God. Job even understood. I don't know if he understood or if this spirit was just moving his life. But in some way, he understood that he too would live again one day. A very real existence. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, if you want to read it. A very real existence of a very bodily resurrection of the people of God and the church of God and the children of God. I said bodily and I meant bodily. It's going to be different. Same, but different, as they say in some places. It's going to be real. It's going to be a real existence. And Job says, listen, you look at my life. There's one thing I need you to know. I don't care what you see. I want you to know this. I know that my Redeemer lives, and that at last he will stand on this earth. And this I know, that in my flesh, once this skin is destroyed, that in my flesh I will see God. I know that my Redeemer lives. I know that I am going to heaven. I know. I know. I have no doubt. Well, how do you know? What, you know, and the greatest, I guess one of the greatest scriptures about that is in Romans, where it says that the Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. It's in Romans chapter 8. The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. It almost seems arrogant to say, I know that I belong to Christ, but the Spirit of Christ that lives inside of us is actually bearing witness with our spirit so that we can know. Do you know that you belong to God? Do you know that one day you're going to go to heaven? Well, you know, I hope so. Wrong answer. Wrong answer. If you're hoping so, according to the way that we have hope, the way that we use the word hope, you're in trouble. I'm just going to say that. Well, Brother Keith, you don't know what I've done. That shows a flaw in what you understand salvation is. Because you see, it doesn't matter what you have done. Salvation isn't dependent upon what you have done or even what you will do. Salvation is dependent upon the grace and the free gift of God through his Son, Jesus Christ. I have only one hope. My life hasn't been great. I haven't done a whole lot of good stuff. In fact, I've done a whole lot of bad stuff, if you want to know the truth. But the fact is, my salvation isn't dependent upon who I was as a young man. It's dependent upon what Christ did when he died on the cross and he went to the grave and he rose again the third day. But Brother Keith, you just don't know. Again, it's not dependent upon you. You have no place in this salvation, this gift. Well, you do have a place. You made it necessary. All right? It's whether your salvation, it's not up to you. It's not up to what you do. It is the gift of God that he has offered in his Son, Jesus Christ. And the only way you're going to find that real, true assurance that's going to put you in life is when you say, is when you can say in your heart, I have only one way that I can get to heaven. And that's because of what Christ did when he was dead and was buried and rose again the third day, according to the scriptures. That's our salvation. That's the gift that he offers to us. Do you know? Do you know? I'm going to tell you this. I just want to say what Job said. You can take this and you can write it down so that it can be remembered. In fact, you can actually just carve this verse, Cheryl, in my gravestone. You can actually. You can just put it in stone so that it is there forever. I don't care what happens in my life from this minute forward. I don't care how dark it gets. I don't care how broken it gets. I don't care how stupid of decisions that I make from here on out. I don't care how tragic life becomes for me from this day forward. I don't care how much doubt enters into my soul from this day forward. You take this and mark it down. I know that my Redeemer lives. Do you know? Stand up with me if you would. Look, I don't know where you are today. I don't know. God laid the word on my heart and I gave it to you. I know that my Redeemer lives. I got excited this week. I was texting people. I was so excited. I know my Redeemer. Been texting everybody all week. I know my Redeemer lives. My Redeemer lives. My Redeemer lives. They're like, what are you talking about? I just got excited because I know that my Redeemer lives. I need you to know. I want you to know. Look, if you're watching out there, you know, if you have a pastor and God's speaking to your heart somehow this morning, get on the phone and call your pastor. Call him right now and just tell him. Just try to explain to him what's going on. If it's me, give me a call. I'll be done here in just a minute. You can just give me a call. You need to know. You need to know. We need to know that our Redeemer lives. I'm just going to ask you to bow your heads and close your eyes just for a second, just in silence. If you are in here today and you want to come forward, feel free to do that. If you'd like me to pray with you about something or whatever you need to do this morning, you do it.